What are you willing to struggle for in your life? Welcome to The Good Word. We begin this week's lesson with Jacob in Genesis 25 to Genesis chapter 30. I am Matilde Frey, Professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University School of Theology, and I'm your host and study guide author. Our topic for this week is Jacob's struggles of life. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn, Professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament from the Walla Walla University of Theology. Another son, his name is Jacob, and for his long life, he will struggle with that name and its meaning. What are you willing to struggle for in your life? What are the things that are worth for struggling?
Preserve one's integrity and preserve the truth about God, it seems to me, are two crucial things for a believer.
Yeah, I like your reference to integrity, because I think when you first voiced the question, Matilda, the very first thing that came to my mind was, a sense of matching between my deep values and the way that I'm living my life, the way I invest my time and emotional energy and on, resources. Yeah.
Now, the Bible introduces us to a man, and in our English Bibles, we read that he is peaceful or content. That is how he's described at first, but it doesn't take really a long time, and we get to learn so much more about him.
Well, what's intriguing is that the narrative presents him as mama's boy.
Yeah.
And Esau is, his dad. Mm-hmm. It's very intriguing. But, boy, underneath that smooth exterior is all kinds of nasty stuff.
Yeah. There is a great tension in the household, and it plays out probably between mom and dad, like you mentioned, and then goes on to the children. And comes out in forms of deep hatred, even. So at the end, Jacob will have to leave and run for his life, basically.
Now, what do you make of the fact that his character is indicated by the circumstances of his birth? You know, he who grasps by the heel, in other words, the very naming of him, seems to indicate that this is a crook. And when we come later to name where his name is changed, God says, you're no longer going to be the crook. You struggled with God and have prevailed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biblical stories are famous for doing this kind of thing with the names, aren't they? In many places. And so the story of the birth with the twin babies there may be indicative for that moment, but it doesn't stop there. So he continues to be at the heels of his brother. And I was intrigued by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks' way of explaining the character of Jacob, who wants to be somebody else, who does not like who he is. He strives to be the other. He, like if he is the mama's boy and the smooth person staying home, but his desire is to be the strong man and the one who the father loves. And so he does everything to get to that part, to get to that point, right?
And that's what makes these stories ring true throughout the generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because who can't identify with that?
Yes.
Struggle at one point or another.
Yeah. I mean, we live in families where we, together with our own siblings, and there is rivalry. There is most, if it's good, it's subtle, and we overcome it with time. this story takes it very far.
Yeah. And it's so easy for us to think of deceit. I know I've often heard people talk about, well, how could someone outright lie? But in many ways, we see in this story what would be true for many people, kind of navigating the complexity of human life. And that is, when we want to be viewed a certain way, we do morph ourselves, right? We do go to various measures. And here we see maybe not a Jacob who wakes up and says, oh, you know, I'm going to live up to my name and deliberately kind of deceive and work the workarounds. But you see almost in a vivid way how there's this, like, he's trying to survive. He's trying to make an identity for himself. And the deceit is part of that, right?
Mm-hmm. And what's intriguing is that when you read the story carefully, you come to have more compassion with Esau, but you know that God is with Jacob.
I always feel very sorry for Esau. He got the short end of the stick. Yeah. And one of the most remarkable things about Esau is when Jacob comes back, mm-hmm. you know, Esau's not out to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
He's very generous.
Despite being set up almost with the, you know, as you read the narrative, yeah. you're set up to think he's coming mm-hmm. with yeah. death in mind. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So I suspect there is a very nice place in God's kingdom for Esau. That's just my suspicion.
What do you think we're supposed to make of that, you know, what you just said, Matilda, about in the narrative you get this strong sense that God is with Jacob? So are we simply to take this as a sort of proverbial God is willing to use people to be with people, present, active in their lives, despite the messiness of human life? Or are we supposed to see something broader than that? I guess I'm thinking broader in terms of a narrative thread, almost like what Ty Gibson points out when he talks about the covenant promise going through a line, right? But not the line you would expect. Solomon becomes king and builds the temple, but he's not the firstborn, mm-hmm. right? Jacob, and there's all through the entire biblical text, this almost jagged line where the mm-hmm. covenant promise is transported through the centuries. So I just wonder, or maybe both. Maybe we're to take that God delights in being part of the messy human life, and also see that narrative thread?
Well, the amazing thing about it, Jacob, that his cheating ways continue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once he goes to live with Laban, it's a whole family of cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
And then that comes back again to the question, why should God be with a man like this?
Yes, it is a hard one. And it is true, the trajectory is supposed to go through the firstborn, but it almost never does.
Yep.
And it's always the underdog who gets in there. And this one is never like a good character, mm-hmm. a character mm-hmm. that we would admire. It's always someone who needs to experience a lot of trouble, a lot of ways to suffer, and then come to a different place to change. And that change itself happens because of an interaction with the divine. And so the times when Jacob has the dream with the ladder, for example, and then again when he comes back, the wrestling, the night where he wrestles, mm-hmm. those are the moments where then God is the one who shines in the story, who is bringing about the transformation of the human character.
Yeah, I am particularly drawn to that picture of the wrestling because Jacob wrestles with him, and here he puts God into a hammerlock and says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So there's a certain tenacity about Jacob, which I think one sees there. And yet when the man touches his thigh, dislocates it. His response when he comes away from that, he says, I've seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved.
Mm-hmm.
He's not complaining about the dislocated hip. His life has been preserved, and he's seen God face to face.
How he must have, like, hobbled
when
he came to meet Esau.
Yes.
He definitely didn't look a good-looking man there. So to encounter God and to see God has a result that at the end Jacob is not the strong man again.
Now there's one other question. This throws a monkey wrench into our organization, but I would be interested in your reaction to the Rachel-Leah matchup, because both of you are mothers. And here you see Leah is not being honored. It's Rachel who is honored. Any words of wisdom that would help the rest of us see that? Who has your sympathies?
I sympathize with Leah during the time when they have, like, it goes back and forth when they have children. And then the sympathy is at the end with Rachel when she dies on the side of the road. So both are women who live in a world that is definitely not good to them,
mm-hmm.
no matter where they are, even in their own father's house or when they are married and travel mm-hmm. together with Jacob. So it is a world that is painful for women and families with children. And that's where the struggle again continues, and then it goes into the children themselves, for example, Judah and so on, who is the son of and will like live within that messed up family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this discussion about Jacob, my conversation partners, Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson. And I thank also Lindsay Gisbert, our program engineer, and to all of you who are listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.